Here we come. And here comes the wooden wagon. There's a wooden wagon. Teeny tiny lady. She lives in a pickle jar. She loves her life. And she's waving to the crowd. Big, big smile, Tom. And she's being able to be brought into the studio. She'll sit right up there on the big bar stool next to Jacob. Do some of his work for him. Tapping on the glass and giving the teeny tiny thumbs up. Letting her know that is the letter of the day. You're writing to us at MyNorthwest.com. You're texting as well at 98973, cleaning up a few messages that have come into me. Yes, Wes and Puyallup, I'll have a beer with you on Saturday. They are in Puyallup. So take care of that. By the way, it's going to be 8 degrees in Puyallup. So
bring your snow boots.
Having a beer. And I can't see from where I am. Oh! Look, Tom, look who's holding on to the teeny tiny. It's your favorite.
It's hard being an only child.
That is right.
2-year-old Theo Brady of Salt Lake City, Utah, recently felt a strange attraction to a Halloween decoration.
Wait a minute.
If not for a lack of an epidermis, you'd swear this skeleton was Theo's brother from another mummy.
You can go now.
Teeny, I think you had a chance to get something in the teeny tiny lady's ear there, Tom, because somebody vindicated by her takedown on Steve Hartman. So
that's all right.
There's a 56-page class action lawsuit against the city of Seattle. It's from a bunch of people that lived near or in the CHOP zone. It was not exactly the summer of love for them, and they have hired an attorney, and then the attorney is basically spelling out that the city had left these people high and dry, not doing the job it's supposed to do by protecting their personal property, and just they should have a general sense of goodwill by living, or at least some sort of sense of I should be able to be at peace where I live, and the city neglected that. Did you get a chance to also see the piece? I have two cuts from the attorney arguing that about what the city should have done. You want to hear some of that?
Okay, I mean, that is a somewhat older story, so let's just contextualize it. Danny Westney did a column. Mm-hmm. Talking about it's kind of this might be an inappropriate use of the word schizophrenic, but it's sort of a schizophrenic approach to Mayor Durkan, because half the city thinks that she was way too aggressive on the protesters, and half the city seems that she was way too lenient with the protesters. And so you have he's talking about the two sides here. Mostly the criticism, like the people that ran the recall petition, which eventually thrown out, were people that says, you know, Jenny Durkan, you came down too hard on the protesters. You were, you know, you allowed the cops to, you know, mistreat them and all. And they were trying to recall her for that. There have been calls for her to resign from, I don't know, one of the Equity Now organizations. Yeah. And then he says, and then there's a counter narrative, which comes from the businesses that had to be shut down in effect during the CHOP days. And mm-hmm. So is it that she overreacted or underreacted? And the question is maybe neither and maybe both. Okay, so that sets the context for this is the side, this is the pushback from the initial progressive leftist side that complained that she allowed the cops too much leeway to, mishandle the rioters and the protesters. This is the other side saying, hey, businesses were the ones screwed, not the protesters.
Let me ask you something. So is Danny, for the sake of creating the article, is he using the 50-50 to make it seem, again, with all due respect for people's mental illness, 50-50 being schizophrenic? Yeah. Or if it was 80-20 or 90-10, the article wouldn't be as interesting, and the platform and the hook on what it's built would die, right?
Yes. No, that's on me. He does not give any percentage. I was just trying to simplify things. Okay. Basically, he says there were sort of two political tides.
Okay.
So he doesn't give a percentage breakdown at all.
Right. They're not equal in population.
Just not necessarily.
One group, another. Okay. But two both narratives. Of them are loud enough, right? Both loud enough. In this case, this attorney argues that the city shouldn't have had to consult the public for making decisions. He says,
what our clients are saying there is, hey, look, you've blocked access to our streets. You've blocked access to our residences. And we didn't get a chance to, you know, come in and say, hey, we're not really happy about this. And we like to present our side of the story. And so there was no notice or an opportunity to be heard by our clients before the city took these drastic measures to basically cede 12 city blocks to other people.
I mean, Telly, if you weren't following the story and you just happened to read it, you'd say, so there were riots people went after the East Precinct, a police station. Then the police left the station. Then the city gave up the 12 blocks. Then the city put large, big pieces of concrete in so that people couldn't drive in there. Police couldn't go in there. Fire couldn't go in there. People that did walk through there were harassed or questioned as to why they were there. That the city gave up 12 blocks to people, to protesters that then live there. You would really think, well, was it an experiment? Was it for only a certain set of time? Were they trying to prove something? They gave it up, just walked away from a police precinct and didn't provide services to the people that were paying taxes that were living in that area.
Or if they did, they were going to be delayed in getting access to them. So,
oh, okay. Delay is okay. You expect that.
It's not.
As a taxpayer. Okay.
But
right.
It's a practical. I mean, I think it was a practical decision to do that, given the numbers that they were dealing with. I think, and I would have to go back and my guess is the big blocks of concrete that were blocking off access to those roads once the CHOP area was established, and it kind of shrunk, you know, bit by bit. But I think they were there for the safety of those inside CHOP, because there were people, remember, there was somebody who was driving down and, you know, they thought that it could be used as like a weapon. And so the vehicle. And so I think it was a way to kind of prevent that from happening if there are a lot of people in there. So they were defensive. And I think at the time they thought that it was might be safer rather than having 5,000 people all mobbing the precinct to try to get back into the precinct, that they would set parameters and figure out a way to kind of negotiate it away.
I see. So you were around. Wasn't there a group of was it black activists that took over a building in Seattle? Was this the 60s or 70s?
Yes,
do you remember that time?
Decades ago.
And there was then a city council member that was also involved in that sort of taking over that building. So they took over the building. This was happening also in the 60s and 70s in college campuses, where someone would go in and take over the dean's office or
The administration building.
Administration buildings.
It happened in the University of Washington, I'm pretty sure, too.
I think it did, right. And, you know, the Weatherman Underground would take over spots and different groups. And they'd take it over, and then they would negotiate over one thing. This or that. Mm-hmm. So basically, a group of people took over 12 city blocks. And then when the city said, well, what do you want? They was sort of nebulous as to what their demands were. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to have this because it was so horrible how badly they were treated. And then the people, can you imagine living in it? And every night, the noise, the screaming, the yelling, the gunshot. Can you imagine living in it? So these guys are saying, we're bringing the case against the city and more from the lawyer.
The client support. What led to the protests, namely, you know, the horror of seeing that video of George Floyd die. And the clients want to make clear and have made clear in their lawsuit that the lawsuit isn't about that message. They aren't here to dispute that message. They support it. But the lawsuit is about the city's actions in endorsing basically the occupancy of this area by third parties who were, you know, and to the exclusion of the city providing basic services such as 911 services, emergency medical services, and the like.
Hmm. Okay, now do we have any sound from the other side?
There is no other side.
Well, yes, there is. There is. So Danny Westney talks about how the protesters dubbed her General Durkin, because they thought she was acting like a military general. And then the businesses and the people that lived inside there called her Mayor Deliberate Indifference. So it was a battle. That's his headline. General Durkin or Mayor Deliberate Indifference. So, you know, how... And that's why I think that she's caught between a rock and a hard place. She is disliked both on the left and the right. You know, relatively speaking, in terms of this.
Yeah, she was also the mayor that was on national television referring to it as a summer of love, right?
Well, yeah, the thing is, I think in retrospect, I didn't mind that kind of rhetoric because she made it as kind of a crack. She's saying, who knows, maybe this will turn into a summer of love. But because it's now been used, you know, to bash her, I think it was unfortunate to say. But she was talking about, at the time, it was already like a tense situation. And so for her to throw that out,
she referred to it as like a street fair.
Well, it did. Well, a lot of people, if you look at some of the early reporting, they said it did have that kind of flavor of, you know, of a festival. And one of the reasons why the city moved in eventually is because it got darker and darker, and two people were shot and killed in there.
She said it has a street fair atmosphere to it. And most of those street fairs normally last one day or 2 days, like a weekend. But they don't
That's
go on and
point.
On. I guess it's the thing is you're going to have standing as they bring the suit forward. What are the damages? You have to show the damages to be able to say, look, this is where the city failed us, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're going to add. But you're going to be able to say, listen, I owned a business and I lost $80,000 or it cost me X amount of dollars in order to repair the broken windows to my business, to my home.
Yes.
You know.
The tricky thing is that a lot of those businesses were already hit by the pandemic. So what you have to establish is, okay, a year ago, my business would have made $100,000. Because of the pandemic, it was making $50,000. And because of the chop, it was making $20,000 or zero. Then those, I think, would be the damages.
Yeah. The officers that went into Breonna Taylor's home looking for drugs and money, the one guy got charged with reckless disregard as he discharged his weapon all over the place.
Yeah,
and then one of the officers was shot in the leg by Breonna Taylor's boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And that guy has been or is now talking about what happened that day and comparing it to other police actions.
Well, actually, the cop is talking.
The cop is, yeah, the one that was shot in the leg.
Okay, yeah. No, I thought you said it sounded like you were setting up the boyfriend sound. Okay.
No, I'm trying to find him. Hang on. Do you have it, Jacob?
Let's see. We can start. Yeah, we'll start at the beginning.
So we get up. I remember banging on the door. It's open hand, hard smacks. Bam, 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 bam. First time didn't announce. Just hoping she would come to the door so everything was quiet. Neighbors wouldn't come out.
Can you hear anything from inside the apartment?
Not at that
when
point.
You're doing that?
Okay. Not at that point. After the first bang, nothing happened. I banged again. I yelled, please search warrant. Please search warrant. You're yelling this.
How many times do you yell that?
Probably three times each with each bang. There was a total of six bangs, six different knocks at the door while we're doing this.
There were seven officers on the scene that night. One said he thought he heard movement inside the apartment.
He said, stop. I can hear somebody coming up to the door. So we stop. We listen. Nobody says anything. We yell again, please search warrant. Open the door if you're there. Please search warrant. And finally, I look back at my lieutenant, who's in the stack back here, and he goes, go ahead and hit it.
Even as you're hitting the door with
yelling
the ram, you're yelling.
Yes, everybody at this point.
Everybody.
Because that's what we do.
All seven of them.
All seven.
All right. I can actually control the sound from here now. Okay, so he's setting up. They're entering. It's midnight. It's dark. She's in there. She's asleep. Her boyfriend's asleep. The police, seven of them, coming through the door of the batting ram. They knock the thing, I believe, off the hinges, and they come in there.
Kenneth Walker said that he and Breonna were...
Kenneth Walker, the boyfriend.
...were screaming. Who is it? Said they never heard any announcement that it was the police. And what do you say to that?
Maybe he didn't.
But there are also 11 neighbors who said the same thing that he said.
Those 11 neighbors also said we did not. Kenneth Walker says we knocked. The other witness says we knocked. So if you didn't hear us knock, you're not going to hear us announce.
Yeah, this is a lot of his case is going to get down to that. He's got, I think, a civil case against the city. It's going to be you didn't announce. And then because you didn't announce and didn't say who you were, I shot you. If you were the police, I knew you were the police, I shot at the police, then he's got a problem, right? So he has to, his case rests upon the police not announcing.
Whose case are you talking about?
I'm talking about the case that Kenneth Walker has against the police department.
Okay, yeah. I thought you were implying the other way around, because at first they charged Kenneth Walker, and then they dropped those charges once they heard more of the details.
What he wishes would happen instead, he says...
How would you have done it differently if you could have?
We would have either served the no-knock warrant, or we would have done the normal thing we do, which is 5 to 10 seconds, to not give people time to formulate a plan, not give people time to get their senses so they have an idea of what they're doing. Because if that had happened, I'm telling you, Mike, if that had happened, Breonna Taylor would be alive.
You believe she'd be alive?
100%.
If you had just stormed in?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's the opposite, I think, of what I expected him to say. Very interesting.
Yeah, well, it does make sense when you think about it, right, Tom? So it's midnight, it's quiet, come blasting right in the door, and that way the guy doesn't have a chance to get his gun and shoot, right?
Yes.
And the cops don't shoot back, right?
Yes, but they also could have waited longer. One of my problems with this case, and we haven't really talked much about the details of the case, is that they, whoever was observing what was going on, they did a poor job of establishing who was in the apartment. She literally drove home with this guy. They were watching her go into the apartment. He went in with her, and they thought she was alone. That, to me, feels like bad police work. If she had been alone, she also would probably have been alive because she didn't have a gun. And if they had known that, that probably wouldn't have happened either.
Mm, okay.
I think the assumption on the cops' part was that they were maybe expecting resistance, and because of that, they were... They barged in. It's weird that it's a no-knock warrant, and yet they knocked. I don't know. Mm. Lots of questions.
Yeah, the reason they do the no-knock is they said that if you...
To catch him off guard.
Right. Well, that and they destroy the evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going in there to try to find drugs, you knock, it's police, and then the guy's in there flushing the stuff down the toilet.
But the weird thing is they had a no-knock warrant, and they didn't use it. They knocked, supposedly. At least that's what they said. Tell us.
So much more to that story. All right, Tracy Taylor's got traffic in it. Like washing windows and doors. It's like a cop music from the 70s, Tom. Yeah. Cars coming up over the hill, streets of San Francisco. It's like washing windows and doors, reminding you, be like Tom in every regard, except for living in a hole in the ground with a big piece of pig iron on top, because that's no way to live. It's a good thing to have windows and doors. They're not sitting right, not set right. If you got moisture between those two pieces of glass, that double pane does nothing for you but cause you a pain. Lake Washington Windows and Doors to take good care of your house. It's the biggest investment you've got next to your health. Thanks, Lake Washington Windows and Doors. Thank Jacob for writing that spot. Appreciate that, Jacob.
You're welcome, I guess.
quick thing. I said to Jacob, hey, quick, get that sound from that Charlie Brown thing, Tom. How about this? Charlie Brown, for the first time, I think since 1960-something, will not be on television.
It'll be on people's television sets, but it won't be broadcast.
Oh,
That's amazing, but I guess it's the ultimate encroachment of pay TV.
Maybe that, or also just maybe they look at it and they think, you know, this is Charlie Brown is treated so poorly in all of these shows that maybe he gets bullied. Oh, Tom, please.
No way.
Even adults treat him badly.
No.
He knocks on the door. Somebody gets something, and the adult.
I got 5 pieces of candy. I got a chocolate bar. I got a quarter. I got a rock.
I got a rock. That means an adult made the decision to give the one kid 5 pieces of candy, and then reach into its little other box and pull out a rock and drop it in Charlie Brown's bag. And then every house he went to, he got a rock.
You know, there's always one kid that always gets. It's always the butt of the joke. It's a human condition that Charlie Brown embodies that we all can identify with at various points in our lives.
Hmm. I did read a fascinating study of comedy going back to the time of Aristotle that establishing Aristotle said in comedy, someone must be the victim.
Hmm. Well, so somebody has to be the butt of the joke. Is that sort of the point of it? You need a villain the comic buffoon, like somebody who you can laugh at and, you know, but that's the opposite of what I think Charlie Brown is. You do not laugh at Charlie Brown. You sympathize with Charlie Brown. You do not identify with Lucy when she pulls the football away when he goes to kick it. You don't go, ha, 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 we got you, Charlie. We all identify with Charlie and feel bad. So I'm not sure that it's the same kind of comedy or comic burst that maybe Aristotle would be talking about.
Yeah, I don't remember laughing as a kid when Charlie Brown got a rock.
No, but it makes smile because it's like, what? That is every kid. There's always a kid who doesn't get a rock, but he maybe gets the worst piece of candy, you know, like the bit of honey or something, you know, that you just, there's always a sad sack kid. And the rock is just kind of like a comic exaggeration of that memento of his loserdom, which applies to all of us.
I see. So like this. Hold on.
I got 5 pieces of candy. I got a chocolate bar. I got a quarter.
I got an apple with a razor blade in it.
Urban myth.
Yeah, in a year of political anger, people are most upset with not the president, not Joe Biden, but who, Tom?
According to this article, the undecided voter.
Wait a minute. Whenever you start out with according to this article,
means I don't agree.
I immediately know that you don't agree with it. So in effect, you got a rock. You do not believe that people have as much scorn for the undecided as this article is presenting. That people, what, you can't make up your mind? Are you kidding me? And then this, I give you a choice between a tuna fish sandwich and an S sandwich that's got bits of real, chicken. I'll give you chicken, or I'm going to give you an S sandwich with a piece of glass in it. And the person responds, how's the chicken cooked?
Exactly. That's a good line. I mean, the article is very cleverly set up that way. And the reason, so here's the justification for having the article at all. Then we can talk about why I disputed. But right now, this election has so polarized us. There are not that many people sitting on the fence. You could argue in 2016 that the people, the Americans in general, were as unhappy with the two candidates as any election maybe in our lifetime. I mean, neither Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump had the worst, sort of favorability ratings of any candidate, and Hillary Clinton had the second worst in the history of, you know, American polls or whatever. So that might be the case. In this case, we're so polarized, but there are a lot of us that have already decided one way or the other, like Trump's the best or Trump's the worst. And so for people now, they say that last time out, 13% of the electorate at this point was still undecided. Now they say it's more like between 2% and 8% at a reach. So that we are much more divided now on one side or the other. And that, I think, is a legitimate point that how really? I mean, so if you support Trump and somebody else supports Biden, neither side can imagine how you could possibly even entertain the notion of voting for the other person.
Right. And so there's a Venn diagram. There would be nothing in between the two. And this leads to the second part of the other story we're going to do, which is why there are no real third party candidates have come out. This. In 2016, that Gary Johnson guy, before he couldn't remember where Aleppo was or whatever.
Aleppo.
About 9%. He was polling at about 9%. Jill Stein was in there.
Very
she had about 11%
well
and a number of people. There are about 5.7 million people that voted in 2016 for a third-party candidate, and what they say will happen is Donald Trump wants to get a piece of them. About 40-some percent of them say they're going to go for Joe Biden, but there was really no room, no air in the room this year in 2020 because everybody had already decided sort of where they wanted to be.
Yeah, I really found this article because I really hadn't noticed it, how low attention the third party candidates had gotten this time out. And they mentioned, the higher profile of Gary Johnson and Jill Stein on both sides. And they say, for instance, this, I forget her name, is it Joe Jorgenstern? Is that the libertarian candidate? And they say she should be a real draw for Donald Trump folks because she's very hard on this and this and this, and she doesn't have the character issues that Donald Trump has. So why wouldn't she be a strong lure for Trump voters? She's getting almost no attention.
1%.
And 1%, and likewise, the Green Party candidate, the guy who actually formed the Green Party decades ago, is the Green Party candidate. He's not getting any love, and you'd think that he would appeal to the left progressives. So why is it that they're gaining no traction this year, comparatively speaking? And the argument in this article, which I think is mostly true, this is seen as such an up or down, yay or nay, black and white election. Right. That even the people, you know, people do not want to throw away their vote. They either want to get Trump in or they want to get Trump out. And mm-hmm. so even the left, who despised, maybe because of Bernie Sanders' treatment, they despised, oh, Hillary Clinton stole it from us. I'm not even going to vote for her. It doesn't mean they'll vote for Trump, but it means they wouldn't vote at all. Or, you know, whereas 8 years ago or 4 years ago, they would have voted for a third party candidate. This time, I think both sides see the stakes so high, they're not going to, in effect, and I put this in quotation marks, waste a vote on a third party candidate who doesn't have a chance.
So you think what percentage, this is just off the top of your head, what percentage of votes that will be cast for Joe Biden are cast for Joe Biden? And what percentage of those votes cast for Joe Biden are cast because he is not Donald Trump?
Well, again, mild speculation on my part. I would say 60% of Biden's vote is anti-Trump.
Wow, that's the exact same number I was thinking. 60%.
Really?
Yeah. I think 40% going for Joe. They know Joe. They're Democrats. They vote Democrats. The others are like, you're not Donald Trump. You're as far from Donald Trump as possible. And, you know, we don't really know what you stand for, but that's all right because you're in your basement. You're not Donald Trump. And this is a screw you to Donald Trump.
I hope.
I hope you're wrong.
Yes, I know you and do, hope, and that's why we have a show.
I hope Inslee's got plans because the left love to riot, win or lose. So let's see what happens.
They are preparing for it.
What does that mean?
I know. I have no idea.
All right. Tracy Taylor's got a look at traffic. Don't forget to take care of the letters. Teeny tiny later. All right. All right, we got the letters coming up. The mailman's about to sing that song, Sean, but we got lots of letters. So what I'd let you do is I'm going to let you play the song up until the point that you get bored. All right? Here comes the mailman now.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman.
I guess why not?
All right, here we go.
Boring.
I thought we'd maybe get a second verse in.
That is mean. All right, Tom, we'll get to the letter of the day, but first let's take care of all the rest.
Okay, so we started off the show with Hannah on a couple of stories. The first story we dealt with was the doing away of the navigation team and now the three-month replacement plan. Nick from Orcas Ways in Denver and Fort Collins both have a program where they send social workers with cops to mental health crisis events, and it's been a massive success.
Oh, good to know. Thanks for that, Nick. 206 says, a few years ago, a social worker was attacked by a homeless man with a knife. When they were trying to clear the camp, she was saved by an armed SPD officer.
COVID-19 vaccine issue, 253 weighs in. I don't want to take it, and I feel like they're going to come up with a way to try and force it on you.
Wow. Okay. That sounds like a Mission Impossible movie with the fake vaccines and the GPS tracking. Okay, good use of my tax dollars.
And 253, I would figure that they would vaccinate the military personnel first. My hunch is that that probably is happening at the federal level rather than the state level. But yeah.
Brad the painter says, government rationed life-saving health care? Huh. Cornerstone of socialism. Tom must be doing backflips on his bourbon-stained mattress.
No, BSB. Brown sugar bourbon.
Oh, brown sugar
stained
bourbon.
Catch. Very funny, Brad. I like it. 765, Tom and Curly Show. Whichever one of you wants my vaccine dose can have it. I'm 56, white, conservative, and work in an essential position. I don't want my dose, don't need my dose. Given where I work and what I do, if I don't have COVID by now, I'm not going to get it.
Sell it. Sell it. Sandy in Fairwood says, my black husband believes in conspiracy theories due to the fact that black men were offered health care and injected with syphilis 70 years ago. He doesn't trust Bill Gates' work in Africa for the same reason. We know that MLK was secretly taped and maybe killed by the U.S. government. Some conspiracy theories are real.
Ouch. And Skeleton Friend 253, stop with the puns, my God.
What kind of human are you?
Exactly. 206, she's called her own baby creepy and cute. Ha ha, it is the season.
On the Charlie Brown discussion we had, 425 says, John is so loosey.
Oh, boy. And 206, bit of honey is awesome, Tom. Oh. The Tootsie Rolls are trash.
Good. We could get along well. I could give you all my Tootsie Rolls, and you, or vice versa. Bit of honey, I give you the bit of honey. 509, guys, the sad part of humor theory, we find it humorous because it makes us feel superior in some
That's
way.
It. Yeah. That's it. 425, Rodney Dangerfield embodied Charlie Brown humor.
Yeah, yep. That's right. On the CHOP lawsuit discussion, 425, it's easy. Let the protesters destroy all they want in peaceful protest. Then provide immediate cash payment as defined by the insurance companies from city funds and then tax all individuals, mostly renters, not business owners, damaged for all the costs above.
There we go. That solves it. 253. The city not only failed, it decisively refused to enforce the basic laws.
And area code 206, nobody, unless you're the 2% that was protesting, believed the police were the issue. Oh, yeah, I guess you could add the city council to that percentage.
And Rudy Giuliani, Michael in 206 says, hey, guys, the debate today, a new Borat movie comes tomorrow. New Borat movie comes out, and it's my birthday. Wow, what a special day. And the president has set up for me. Yay. Well, happy friggin' hump day, and take care, all.
And now.
Teeny Tiny, is she around, Jacob? Do you see her? Because I can't see her from where I am.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Oh, we hear from an old favorite, the 9-year-old ghost boy.
Oh, boy.
John has no place making fun of the toddler with the skeleton friend.
Oh, boy. Thank you, 9-year-old ghost boy.
You need to go way deep into the archives for our show to get that joke. Good job, 9-year-old.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
Ride no 9-year-old.
Ride no more.
She like left the name for him.
Hanging around my friggin'
I'm feeling good.